Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. We have a returning guest. The last time we talked about the power of having fun, and today we're going to talk about multitasking. You probably follow Dave Crenshaw already on social media. If you don't, he is a best-selling author, speaker, and business coach. Make sure you find him on social media. I love the stuff that he posts. I love the stuff that he puts out. And today he is going to very politely slap you around and remind you, hopefully, that's there's some massive myths going on. So, Dave, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, Matt. Glad to be back.
Well, let's just start off and let's do a little bit of a reminder for our guests. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about who you are? Because, you know, there are a lot of management and time management and accountability experts that are out there. But really, what makes you different and why did I want you to come back on the show?
Well, I don't know why you wanted me to come back on the show, but I can tell you what makes me different. So most time management experts out there are, I call them focus masters. They're people who are inherently organized. They're inherently always on time. They've never had an issue with time management. I, on the other hand, well, I was diagnosed as being off the charts ADHD. And I am inherently what I call a chaos master. Now, why does that matter to the person listening to it? First of all, you're going, well, why should I listen to a guy who's inherently disorganized? The magic is I have learned how to behave as if I am someone who is inherently organized. And I have taught hundreds of thousands of other people to be able to do the same thing. And the reason why it's so different is because I'm coming from the perspective of someone who understands the world in which we live. You know, socks are not magically alphabetized in your Tupperware drawers. They have to be, you have to use a system that is built for the most inherently disorganized person in the world, because the vast majority of us are disorganized and we are behaving like a chaos master, whether or not we want to.
Well, from one chaos master to the other, Dave, I'm super excited to hear about what you're talking about. My team here at Top Advisor Marketing will remind me regularly not to touch specific things, because if I do, I will mess up their wonderful organization. So I delegate to them magnificently. And
that's great.
One of the other things that I want to know way more about is about this myth of multitasking. So many people think that it saves them time, but really, truly, they're wasting it. Why do you say that multitasking is a waste of time?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that your brain is only able to focus on one active attention-requiring task at a time. Now, I said that very particularly. Part of the problem with multitasking just rests in the word itself. The word is an inaccurate phrase that we're using to try to describe multiple complex processes that are taking place in your brain. And it's why in my book, The Myth of Multitasking, I distinguish between switch tasking and background tasking. Now, what is the difference between this and why do we even care about the definition? Because the definition of these words means everything. When you're switch tasking, that means you're trying to perform multiple active tasks at the same time. That would be, Matt, if you're trying to listen to me and do this interview at the same time that you're checking email, you would be jumping back and forth rapidly, and your brain cannot handle that. So what happens is you incur a switching cost every time you switch task. And most people, when they talk about being a good multitasker or I am a multitasker, they are referring to switch tasking. And because there is that cost involved, it is always inefficient. It is always ineffective. Now, on the other side is background tasking. Background tasking is where something mindless or mundane or automatic occurs in the background. For instance, let's say that you're having a conversation with someone on the phone while you're downloading a large file, or I'm checking my email while my printer is printing out a large copy job. It's happening in the background. It doesn't require my attention. Therefore, it is efficient and effective. So when we talk about multitasking, we need to get more precise with the language that we're using. Otherwise, we're creating a lot of confusion and a lot of misconceptions.
That is fantastic. And if you didn't write down those two definitions, please, well, first off, buy the book. And secondly, rewind this and listen to it again. But we're going to talk about switch tasking as a massive negative effect to a business's bottom line. How much money's going down the drain because of this workplace inefficiencies?
Well, there was a study done by Jonathan Spira at BaseX Research a few years back, but the research still holds up. And at the time that they did it, they estimated the cost to the U.S. economy at $1 trillion U.S. dollars. It's such a huge number, it's incomprehensible. It makes my brain explode. So what I like to do is bring it down to a more personal level. Roughly 28%, we're just going to round that down to a clean 25%. One quarter of your workday is lost due to switches and switching costs. Every time you switch attention from one thing to something else, the cost is greater than just the lost activity. It's also the lost time of that transition. Now, 25%, that's a lot. That's one work week every single month. I'm guessing a lot of the people on this call have employees. That means one quarter of the salary that you're paying to people is garbage. I'm not talking about time where they're sitting around the water cooler talking about what happened on Dancing with the Stars last night. I'm not talking about that kind of wasted time. I'm talking about wasted time that's happening in the seams when someone's working on an email and then someone knocks on the door and says, I'm sorry, I've got just a quick question. Or where they're having a meeting and one person is multitasking or switch tasking on something else. All these little things add up to one quarter of your time. And even if you don't have employees, you're losing opportunity costs. Think about what you're making in terms of salary. And then one quarter of that is wasted. You could have been doing something far more valuable with your time.
I hear a lot of advisors, which is our primary audience, say that they keep catching their team members wasting time on social media. Now, but social media is an integral part in how our financial services professionals communicate with their audience and prospects. How are they supposed to manage social media and still be efficient and on task and not switch tasking?
Well, you're going to like this one, Matt, because I'm going to line this up for a nice, nice softball for you and what you do with your services. Now, I would say this to anyone else, regardless of who I'm being interviewed by. So I want to get that full disclosure up front. But the answer is you need to have someone else manage it for you. You need to use the tools that are out there and the outsourcing opportunities and the companies that provide it and the apps that are out there to set this up so that this becomes an automatic for you. If you're an advisor, a financial advisor, your time is far better spent. The value of your time is more powerful when you're focused on bringing in money, when you're making it rain, or when you're coming up with strategies, when you're working with your customers directly. Your most valuable use of your time is not going on Twitter and posting an update. Yet, you need to be doing it. You need to be posting on LinkedIn. You need to be posting on Facebook. These are all things that I'm doing. I have a very active account on all the major social media. But am I the one sitting down, typing out a post, putting it up every single time? Absolutely not, because the switching cost involved in that is tremendous. Am I the one responding personally to every single comment that someone posts up on my YouTube channel or my LinkedIn channel? Absolutely not. That is not the best use of my time. So what I've done is I've trained people in my voice. And we even have a document called the Dave Voice Document. And they're trained in how to use that so that I am not incurring that switching cost and I am not multitasking or switch tasking throughout my day.
Now, Dave, I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here. You and I are very similar in the being wildly chaotic. And it also sounds to me like because you know you're chaotic, that delegation of something like that is important to you when you understand the value. But a lot of our advisors are really controlling and are terrified to hand that over. How did you make that leap? Because I do the exact same thing here at Top Advisor Marketing. I run a company. My job is to run a company to do these podcasts. My job isn't to contact the 7,500 followers that I have on LinkedIn and keep up communications. Now, my team tells me, hey, Matt, you need to reach out to Dave, right? Like we did to get you on the podcast. Mm-hmm. But how did you trust? How do you bridge that need for control?
Yeah, there are a couple of things involved here. And this is stepping aside from the myth of multitasking for a moment and talking more about the work that I do in productive leadership. That's what I really view as my focus, is building productive leaders. And part of building productive leaders is you have to have someone that you lead and that you manage, and you have to help train them to become a productive leader. So, this is a complex question, but I'm going to break it down into two major parts. Number one is that you need to identify the traits of the people that you want to have working for you. Whether that's an employee or whether that's outsourced to Top Advisor Marketing, it doesn't matter. You want to interview people and look for consistent traits. For instance, one of the traits that I want to have in an employee is someone who is willing to learn. Because if they're willing to learn, then that means I can teach them and they are interested in doing it. I also want someone who can follow a system. Because if they can follow a system, that means if I give them a system, they're going to be successful in following that system. It's a fine balance, because we want people to think for themselves. We want people to be creative. But if they're not, at the end of the day, be able to follow a system, it doesn't matter what we're telling them to do, because they're not going to do it. So you have to have a key component of a system itself is the person who is going to execute it. So that's part one, is who is going to be executing it. Part two is my training. So I need to create a system and I need to train them on that system, or I need to hire a company who already has a great system and I need to train them, and we need to have repetition over and over and over. I don't expect someone the first time that I give it to them to do it perfectly. We understand that principle with professional athletes, with musicians. They don't practice and get it perfect every single time. They practice hundreds of times, thousands of times, so that when they get on stage, it's perfect. Yet, when we get into business, we think that people should operate by a different set of rules, don't we? We think, well, I told you how to do it, so you should do it right the first time. And that is a false perspective. We have to repeat and repeat and have repetition become a part of our training, so that when we give it to someone, we know that they're going to do it right.
I love that you said all of that. That was beautiful and so flipping true. You know, one of the things that when we were setting up our podcasting and social media service, we were very cognizant of the concern that advisors would have to hand it off to somebody. So we've not only done unbelievable amounts of training, but we ended up hiring, exactly what you're saying, the right people. We've got four women who have their master's degree in digital journalism and communication. That's what they've studied. So hopefully people will feel even more comfortable handing it off. But all that said, so thank you so much for going down that road for a moment. Now we need to get back on this whole idea of time, because I hear advisors tell me all the time that they are too busy. And as you know, that used to be a huge badge of honor. Like, oh, Matt, you know, I work 80 hours a week. I'm like, wow, dude, that sucks. That's an admission of failure in your mind. And in what you write about and what you talk about when you speak about all over the country, let's break that down. Tell us why that is an admission of failure and it shouldn't be a badge of honor.
Yeah. Busy is an interesting word. If you ask someone how they are, you say, are you busy? Or, you know, even if we ask someone, we want to find out, are you busy? Like, that's a good thing to be. It's a carryover, really, from the time management perspective of the 80s and the 90s. We grew up watching movies with people who, those successful people, were the ones who had things going on, right? Lots of stuff. Oh, I'm getting on a plane. I'm going somewhere. Oh, I've got to go to this meeting. I've got to get on this mobile phone that's as big as a brick. I'm a successful person because I am busy. And you know what? That was probably true in the 80s and 90s. An abundance of activity meant success. But in our day, that is not the case. Because guess what? Everybody is busy. Saying you're busy is saying I'm just like everybody else and I don't know what I'm doing with my time. Because we have something different than what they had in the 80s and 90s, which is this magical device that can reach out to anyone at any time in the world and can look up absolutely anything, including our email, including our calendar, everything that we need to do. This little rectangle that we carry around with us, while it is a great productivity tool, it is also a constant invitation to switch task, to be busy. So being busy is not a success. It is a white flag of failure. So what should we be doing instead? Well, what we should be doing instead is getting results. It doesn't matter how many hours you work every day. It doesn't matter how many hours you work each week. It doesn't matter how in demand you are. What matters is what you're accomplishing with the amount of time that you're spending. And I can give you a quick illustration that nails this point. If I met a couple of people at a cocktail party and person A tells me that they're making $150,000 per year and person B tells me that they're making $150,000 per year, I might say, well, you know, they're doing pretty well for themselves. That's pretty nice. But if I find out in the conversation that person A is working 80 hours per week and person B is working 30 hours per week, who's the bigger success? It's pretty obvious, right? The person who is working less but getting more results is far more successful because they have far more time to spend on the things that matter most to them.
Now, you have a course called Time Management Fundamentals. Tell us a little bit about that, please, Dave.
Yeah, so that's on LinkedIn Learning, which is a learning platform that LinkedIn created. It was formerly lynda.com. It's a place where thousands of courses are available and where I have about 20 courses on everything from time management to how to have a productive meeting.
So this is entirely applicable to everything that you were just saying about being so busy. You, and I'm going to challenge you, depending on how your answer is on this, man, because you talk about a bank of time and you believe that it's possible to borrow time. I'm very interested in your answer to this.
Yeah. Yeah. So we understand the concept of debt when it comes to money. Everyone listening to this who deals with money understands that debt is powerful in both directions. If you borrow from something, you have to repay it with interest. That essentially is how people make money and grow money in their assets. So the question is, can you do the same thing with time? And I would say, yes, you can borrow time. But the problem is what you're doing is you're borrowing from one thing to paying something else. For instance, I'm going to borrow from sleep to pay Netflix and binge watch that show. Okay? So I've borrowed time from sleep I am going to have to repay that with interest, right? And time demands a brutal interest rate. I am going to lose a ton of productivity the next day. I'm probably going to have to make it up with extra sleep at some point. Every time you overspend time and borrow from one thing to pay something else, you're going to have to repay it with a huge interest rate. If I borrow from a date with my wife to pay work, you can't tell me I'm not going to have to repay that with interest over a long period of time, right? So what we need to do, rather than borrowing and getting into this habit of deficit spending with our time, we want to live well within our means. Instead of adopting that time management perspective of the 80s and 90s where every single moment needs to be filled, we want to leave open space. We want to have extra time. So instead of scheduling a 60-minute meeting, you schedule a 50-minute meeting. And instead of scheduling 7 hours in your 8 hour, or sorry, 8 hours in your 8 hour day, you schedule 7 hours. When you live well within your means, you stop paying interest on time and you are far more productive than if you had tried to live right on the edge of your time management means.
Dave, I was hoping to really get blow you up on that one, dude. That was a great response to that. I love your perspective. That's there's so many different pieces there of what you said that I want to unpack. Going all the way back to something that you had said earlier, even when somebody knocks on your door and says, hey, I need to borrow you for a moment, which makes you switch task, which interrupts your flow. And we know that there's an amount of time to ramp back up again to get back into the project that you got interrupted. That's stealing time, too. We have really changed the way that we manage people and trying to get it a lot more in line with not only millennials, but really a more modern management technique. And we try to build in every day that our team only is allowed to schedule X amount of stuff so that one, they don't feel overtasked, overworked, and stressed and frustrated, because we do have all of these great efficiencies in place. Now, one of the efficiencies that I really like are to-do lists. I'm a big list maker. How do you feel about those for organization to keep you focused and on track?
Well, you might not like my answer. I am very much opposed to the use of to-do lists.
Oh, come on, man. Really?
Yes. Here's the thing. You already possess an excellent tool when it comes to organizing your tasks and your projects and everything that you need to do. That tool is called the calendar. And the calendar is an accurate representation of how much time that you have. Again, going back to this concept of not borrowing time, well, the calendar shows you the limits. It is, in a sense, your time budget. You have 24 hours in your day. You have 168 hours in your week. And you must allocate where that time is being used. Here's the big problem with a to-do list. It lacks a when. And by when, I mean a clear date and time on which you're going to accomplish something. If I just list a whole bunch of things on my to-do list, I'm essentially surrendering control. I'm saying I don't really have control as to when these things are going to get done. But if you instead use the calendar, then you can say, this is when I'm going to accomplish it. This is how much time I need to spend to accomplish it, and you retake control, allowing you to live within your means and live within your budget.
I do both. So that's interesting. I need to try to figure out how I can convert what I have on those lists into, because I do that. In fact, I did it today. I put specific time on my calendar, one, to prepare for the podcast. I did it. I had some bills I had to pay and some email I had to. So I actually blocked those out on my calendar. And you know what was funny about that, Dave, is it was very satisfying when I got it done faster than I had allocated from a time perspective. And I don't feel that way because you're right. There isn't a time contingency based off to-do list. That's really interesting. See, I really was. See, I'm waiting to trip you up here, buddy, and I have yet to do that.
I can give you a hint on how to get out of the habit of using a to-do list. And this does come from my time management fundamentals course on LinkedIn Learning. And what I teach people to do is something called processing. And processing is the act of deciding your answer to three questions: what, when, and where. What is the next step? When will it be done, meaning on the calendar? And where is its home, meaning where, if I need to file it, where do I need to put this thing? So what you want to do to transition away from using a to-do list is to go through that list one by one, not do them all, but answer what, when, where for each item. What is the next step? Well, the next step is that I need to create this file. I need to open it up on my computer. I need to call somebody, whatever it is. When will it be done? Well, I'm going to look at my calendar and I'm going to look at the available time that I have and I'm going to schedule some time to complete that on my calendar. And then where is its home? Well, if I need to keep some notes or something like that related to it, then I might put that into a program like OneNote or Evernote. If I don't need it evermore, then I can just scratch it off the list and get rid of it. What, when, where is how you take control of everything that you need to do.
How does that relate to your training on prioritization?
It's a great question. So prioritization, you know, I'm gonna kill a sacred cow here. Okay, I want to set this up, and I do this with all the greatest respect in the world. Prioritization, we have often been taught to use the Eisenhower decision making matrix. This is the four quadrants. You know, urgent and important. And it was made popular by Stephen Covey. And I have all the respect in the world for Stephen Covey and other people who have taught and used this. Again, it was effective in the 80s and 90s, even the 70s, 60s, when we were trying to maximize the use of every hour that we have. Now we live in a different world. Everything is urgent and almost everything is important. So what we need instead is a way to filter these things when they come at us. And we need to put them into what I call approved gathering points. These are staging areas like an inbox or your email inbox or writing notes down to yourself. And then at a calm time when you're answering that when question of what, when, where, you're asking yourself, what is the importance of this to me? And priority is simply a function of time. Here's something that I've run into lots of times. When I go and I work with leaders one-on-one and I'm sitting down with them, I'm assessing how they're using their time, I see most people behave as if everything has to be done within the next 2 weeks. It's amazing to me. You look at the average person's calendar and it is absolutely filled to the brim in the next 2 weeks. And then after that, it's like ghost land, right? What we want to do instead is to start looking further into the future. If something is a low priority, then let's schedule it into the calendar as far into the future as is reasonable. I'm talking about scheduling things into your calendar 6, 7, 8 months down the road if they are low priority. Instead of getting into this urgent, important mindset, what we're doing is we're simply saying, when does it need to be done? Where do I have the most amount of time? And then scheduling that into the future. In fact, what I'm encouraging people to do is to procrastinate positively.
Well, you can't just drop. I mean, you just drop that on me, dude. Explain. What is? I mean, so that's that whole concept. Is you're saying to prioritize and organize and procrastinate things that you know don't need to be done as quickly as they as we seem to put. Because you're right. Every single solitary thing is a rush. I mean, even people's voicemail. I'll get back to you as soon as I can. I'm not going to get back to you as soon as I can. But right. I don't want to say, Dave, I'm going to get back to you whenever the heck I feel like it.
Yeah, there's no time associated with
right.
that.
Right, yeah.
Because there's no time, there's no expectation. Because there's no expectation, people are going to keep interrupting you, and now we're coming back to switch tasking. People are going to interrupt over and over and over. You're going to interrupt yourself over and over and over. That's part of what a to-do list perpetuates.
Sure.
Because there is no when, your brain doesn't know what's going to get dealt with. So instead, we need to give your brain a when. But I'm not talking about negative procrastination where you're putting stuff off because you don't want to do it and you don't feel good about it. That's a different problem. What I'm talking about is where most people are trying to do things way too early, where they're trying to accomplish work simply because they're impatient. But what they really need to do is ask themselves this question. This is a powerful question. You can ask it to your coworkers. You can ask it to yourself. When is the latest this needs to get done? And then you schedule it, not right on the edge of that, but maybe back 5%. So if it needs to get done in 6 months, maybe you schedule the completion date back, you know, a week or two, and then schedule time over those 6 months to move it forward and complete various steps. But let's not try to do everything in the next couple of weeks. That is the recipe for constant switch tasking, which ironically will cause you to get less done.
Right. A quarter. I mean, you're losing a quarter of productivity, a whole week out of every single solitary month. You know, Dave, I'm going to have my entire team. Most of my team listens to all these podcasts. I want to make sure everybody does. This has been magnificently insightful. Now, you talked to the LinkedIn, you talk about the LinkedIn Learning course, which is time management fundamentals, but you have something for free too, don't you?
Yeah, well, basically, this gives you access to time management fundamentals. Now, if you're already a LinkedIn Learning subscriber, you've already got access to time management fundamentals. But if you're not, if you go to freetimegift.com, freetimegift.com, that will take you to a page for my time management fundamentals course on LinkedIn Learning, and it will give you a 30-day free trial access. And that gives you access not only to time management fundamentals, but you know my other 20 courses that are there. Plus, gosh, I don't know what their number is these days. They're growing fast, but probably around 10 to 20,000 other courses that you can take on LinkedIn Learning. I call it the Netflix of learning. So use that. Take the trial, go through the course. It's the same course that leaders and financial advisors, I have done this one-on-one with financial advisors. They have paid me several thousand dollars to take them through this one-on-one. The material that you can get in this free trial is exactly the same that I have taught to financial advisors in private coaching.
Fantastic. Now, Dave, if somebody wants to hire you as a coach, as a speaker, you know, as somebody to come in and maybe do something for a larger organization, what is the best way for people to reach out to you?
Sure. If someone wants to hire me for as a speaker, you can go to davecrenshaw.com. And on the top, you'll see Hire Dave to Speak. There's a demo video there, all that. If you want to hire me in terms of a coach, I have to apologize. I just don't do that anymore.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm reaching far too many people online with my courses.
Good for you. Scale, man. You can help a lot more people that way than you can on one-to-one. That's
exactly.
Phenomenal. Congratulations, man. Phone number. Is there a good phone number for them to reach out to you at?
No, the website's the place to go.
Website's the place to go. Fantastic. DaveCrenshaw.com. Dave Crenshaw, thank you so much for your thought leadership today and talking to us about the myth of multitasking. We're going to make sure that we have all of those links in the show notes. Man, I love having you on, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Matt.
Dave Crenshaw, best-selling author, speaker, and business coach. Spend some time on LinkedIn Learning. I love the fact that he just called that the Netflix of learning. Lots and lots of courses, not only the courses that Dave has built, but you know, when you really look at yourself and you say, what can I do to improve myself? And then when you make those improvements, much like Dave has done with his chaotic sort of nature, just as a person, and built systems and structures in place to make sure that he gets control of his time to make himself more productive, outsource what he needs to outsource in order to stay focused and on track. You need to look in the mirror and see if you're that person too. If you are, then look to outsource the number one thing that financial services professionals put to the back burner when they get busy, which is marketing. So just keep that in mind. Take a look at topadvisormarketing.com. We might be able to help you with some stuff. But if we can't help you and you just need some overall time management stuff, please, please look at Time Management Fundamentals on LinkedIn Learning. Dave's an amazing guest. He's an amazing thought leader. He just blew up Covey, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so I just want everybody to keep that in mind. A legitimate blow up of Covey principles for the 21st century. It really takes a thought leader to do that. And that's what we try to bring to you on Top Advisor Marketing. So for Dave Crenshaw and for everybody at Top Advisor Marketing, if you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, make sure you click that subscribe now button below. And if you do know somebody who has terrible, terrible time management and does a lot of switch tasking and multitasking, please make sure that you share this podcast with them by clicking the share button below. This is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
Are you ready to change the way you communicate with your clients? Are you tired of being the best kept secret in your area? Learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your business. Contact us today and see what the power of podcasting can do for your business. Click on the Contact Us link on our website at topadvisormarketing.com and set up a call to learn more. Follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook for more updates and information.
This was brought to you by Iris.xyz, a platform helping financial professionals become better in business and life through new media and new voices. Visit them and learn more at Iris.xyz.